Hi, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us from another episode from the Crow's Nest. We are back, folks. I'm Kelly J. Lewis, and with me, of course, is Dr. Kevin Crow.
Hey.
So, Dr. Crow, this is something that I've been talking about on the show during the week, and I got to get your opinion because a lot of this is so squirrely, and I want to talk about Matt Gaetz. I am obsessed with this Matt Gaetz story.
The weird thing is, he's not on the news as much. He would be more, but yeah, I have, but go ahead. Sorry.
Oh no, but well, he hired a PR firm. I mean, he's really that there's a lot of facets to this story that make it really interesting. And I think it really comes down to his crony, his friend that he hung out with in Florida is really the reason that he got in trouble, right? Because
that's what it sounds like, yeah.
Yeah. And that dude has been, you know, he was charged with like 33 federal charges and only pled guilty to 6, Joel Greenberg. And he wrote a confession letter and gave it to Donald Trump before he was out of office to pardon, you know, to seek a pardon. And so he like totally like let the cat out of the bag for Matt Gaetz and everything. And so what I want to know, especially, you know, with everything that's going on, because there's a couple of things I got to ask you about on the Republican side. What I want to know with that is, I mean, you know, Matt Gaetz prided himself on not having friends, not being liked in those traditional Republican circles. And now everybody's kind of dropping him in the grease a little bit. And so do you think that plays into this split? That's really what I want to talk about, is this potential split, like from the, and I'm going to say like the Cheney Republicans. Is that a thing? Is that appropriate?
Well, there's only Republican, two of them, is maybe, that appropriate? Anyways, of the Cheney. That's not a large number of them. I don't know. All both parties are, you know, there's always factions within parties and everything too. And going back to Gaetz for a second. And again, I have not kept up with the reason because it's not in the news as much. And there's so many other things to keep up with. So I have to plead ignorance since the last time we spoke about him. I mean, you know, and everything. I will say this. There's another factor here. And this is always something. In this, it doesn't matter whether we're talking about a Democrat. It doesn't matter whether we're talking about a Republican. It doesn't matter if we talk about somebody who's honest or somebody who's dishonest. One of the things you have to watch for is we always keep up with national politics. I mean, we keep up with our local. But besides our local, we keep up with national. You've got to remember, every one of these people has local politics as well in their state. And so one of the things that you'll notice when people get hooked in with people shady, and I'm not saying he's hooked in with somebody shady, I'm just saying this in general. A lot of times it will be somebody locally who's shady. Even if you go back to, if you think about Clinton for a second, you had like the McDougals. Nobody, they weren't national players. They were small scale Arkansas players. Think about, again, with Clinton, you think of Whitewater scandal. Well, that was an Arkansas scandal. And so this is something, you know, that we overlook is again, and if Gaetz, if there is something shady with Gaetz, I'm not saying there is, but if there is, notice it's something that was hooked in with Florida. I mean, it's not something on a national scale. And we forget about that. But I think that's true with almost with most politicians. If they're going to go down, if something is shady, a lot of it has to do with what's going on locally, the people who back them initially, even more than what happens at the national level. You know, and again, I'm a Republican. I'm a conservative Republican. I'm a person who may even throw out the word deep state. But not everything is deep state. So a lot of it is local, too.
Well, and that's a great point, because I think that we do, even the wonkiest of us,
yeah,
do tend to forget that even though they are on that national level, you're right, they do have their local politics to contend with. And just like this, when you're talking about campaign finance, you know, riffraff or, you know, any kind of shenanigans that go on with that, you're right. It usually does start within their district and within their local constituency. And so, but this was going on in Florida, and there's some really nefarious stuff that's been reported on Matt Gaetz and his behavior when he was in the Florida House. And here's something that's interesting, and that brings your point around, is his local people elected him. And this is just, and not just with him, Marjorie Taylor Greene, you know, these sides.
I mean, if you see the firebrands on both sides, again, like I said, Tlaib, Omar, all of them, it's the local ones, which again, that's the way we're set up for, in their defense too. You know, but yes.
Well, but what I'm saying is, you know, and not for Democrats or Republicans, I'm just asking this on a purely procedural basis. If Congress themselves decided to expel, I guess, one of their colleagues, how does that work? You know what I mean? Just on a procedural level, not applying that to Democrat or Republican or this person or that person, just in general. If Congress decides, Congress themselves, whether it's the House, well, you know, House or Senate or whatever, if they decide that they need to remove one of their colleagues, how does that work?
There's an easier way. First of all, that gets dicey if you're actually talking about removing them. Sorry, let me unhook this phone. Sorry. Should have done that initially. There we go. Sorry about that. I saw the number. I can call that number back. Don't worry. Let's see. So it's not like, oh, he's not fulfilling his job. It was my wife. But anyway, so I'll be in trouble, but not.
You sure you shouldn't have taken that?
I'll get it. Don't worry. I'll get it one way or the other. They'll get me. I'll be in trouble. If I come back next week and look all battered, you'll know. Okay. No, my wife is sweet. Anyways, I'm going back to this. You know, that would obviously set a dangerous precedent to try to remove, but there's an easier way, which does happen. And that is, and the parties can do this, or the Congress, either one, and that is people can be removed from committees and stuff. So in other words, a person could still be up there. And I'm not saying this should happen, but I'm saying this is the easiest way. And we saw this we're seeing this with Cheney in a different way. So there's levels. You can remove people from leadership positions. You can remove people from committees. You can do that without actually having to remove them from Congress. And again, there's a number in both that is problematic. I always think, again, going back to Stalwell, I wouldn't have him on anything dealing with national security right now. But again, even though I'm a big critic of Stalwell, even though I still think he has this connection to the Chinese, it's very dangerous. I would remove him from, you know, my national security stuff, things of that nature. But even I haven't called for him to be removed from Congress, because again, that would be something I would still leave to his own constituency. I may not trust him on national security. You might remove maybe some, you know, some clearance and all of that, but removing somebody from office, I'm really, really leery of that.
I mean, that gets to be a slippery slope. And that's why I wanted to talk to you about those procedures, because I know that there are ways that can be done. But it's like I said, that's why I wanted to ask, because to me, I'm like you, I think that would get really dicey.
That's right.
When you're talking about somebody that's elected to represent a community of
people.
That's
right. And this is the word I'll throw out. And both of us, like I said, both of us do not like this. Marginalized. You don't marginalize people. That is how republics fail, is when people are marginalized. If they have no say-so whatsoever, they've got to have some type of say-so. So again, you know, I'll say this again. I would love to see Stalwell out of the Congress. But the point is, that's up to his congressional district. Now, again, with him, I would say they could remove him from, you know, some of the more sensitive stuff if there's concerns. And again, going back to if more evidence came out or something like that, and especially if there was anything financially, you could remove him from certain committees and stuff, but actually removing somebody from Congress with either one of these, I really like leaving that to their own constituents, even though we may not like them. That happens to a lot. If you think about this, if you think about the firebrands on both sides, their power base is a narrow power base, but nevertheless, they are the, they represent that district.
I want to talk to with our second segment about that potential third party in the Republicans, because that seems to be a thing where the anti-Trumplicans, the grand old party, you know, the ones that did not embrace Donald Trump's philosophy and trying to.
I think the Republicans are less factionalized even than the Democrats are. But having said that, even with the Republicans, I wouldn't divide them into two camps. There's multiple camps. Both parties are coalitions. And I honestly believe that both parties are unnatural coalitions. In other words, they're made up of people who, I think within both parties, there are groups who are more different than there are between parties sometimes. I think you see this in both ways. And let me use it, in general. I've always thought, and this isn't the only division, but I've always thought, for example, if you have in the Republicans Party, if you have people that are big on international commerce, all of this, that is almost runs counter to maybe like, for example, Christian conservatives or populist conservatives. I mean, they're almost the opposite. The same thing you could see even if you look at the Democrats, even in groups that we think the wings are the same. So if you look at the Democrat Party, people say, well, you could divide it into two parts. There are those who are economically liberal, whatever, that social programs, things of this nature. There are labor ones. And then there are those who are more culturally left or something like that. But you can't even divide it that way, because if you take any one of those groups, they can be subdivided. So for example, if we were to take, and I hate using the word culturally left, I'm trying to come up with something better. But if you're looking more cultural, progressive, I don't know what word to get it. But if you look, for example, if you were to look at the gay, lesbian, transgendered advocates, and then on the other hand, you associate this also with, if you look at, cultural issues, you find the Democrats are also big on immigration, minority rights, all this. Sometimes those two are at odds. In other words, if you were to look at, polling data of Hispanic communities, Black communities, often they're more conservative than even the general white population is on those issues. So it's weird, because both parties are coalition parties, and they're unnatural coalition parties. They're groups that normally would not be together. And so that's something in American politics. American politics is very factionalized. Both parties are extremely, I think.
Well, but. You know, the reason why I wanted to talk about that is because it really seems like this is a new version of the old scene. You know, this is kind of like when the Tea Party split off. And is that even a thing? I mean, I know that we still have people who say Tea Party, but you know what I mean? Like, that has really, that movement, I guess, within the Republicans has gone to the Trumplicans, but kind there's of, like that still
that one I can explain still faction. Better.
There's still that faction though that wants to maintain that grand old party though, right?
Yeah, and but even that, you know, even forever and a day, the Republican Party, even when it was more like an elite group that was in charge, even then there were regional divides, there's different concerns. You've got to remember, there's different concerns between, for example, manufacturers versus versus financial interest. I mean, so even on that level, they're split. But going back to this, if you look at the Tea Party, it's not that it even faded. What happened with the Tea Party was it was strong. It got a lot of people in. But then what happened is you would have some of the establishment to try to co-opt it or other people to try to co-opt it. And one of the greatest, I think, fallacies is this notion that the Tea Party was started and promoted by the Koch brothers. If anything, the Tea Party are much more populist. They don't, you know, the Koch brothers would be, that'd be the total opposite. But what happened was, is the Koch brothers came in and kind of co-opted some of that and turned people off and everything. But that group is still very active, that those same people are still in there. But you've got to remember, the Tea Party itself really was bottom up. I mean, it really was from local level starting. It wasn't something like there wasn't a think tank that directed that. That started at local levels up and everything. And that's a strength. The weakness of that, of course, is all these groups that are established can kind of co-opt them really fast. But those voters are still out there, definitely still out there. But again, I think separating this between Trump supporters and non-Trump supporters is still too simplistic. I mean, there you've got to look at what appealed to people about Trump instead of it just being Trump.
And see, I guess for me, it's hard to look at that from the outside and see that separation because the dedication to Trump is so in your face, you know, with the hats and the flags and everything else.
Well, I think one of the things that appealed is there were certain stuff he said he would do and he did it. And that was something that really caught people off guard. Most people are used to being lied to. And so that's what I think explained. And you've got to remember this. There were even some of the groups that would be upset. These would be established interest groups that a lot of people had basically said enough. It's good that they're upset. I've mentioned this before. There is... The Republicans who disliked Trump, you can call them, you know, the country club Republicans or whatever, they were more anti-Trump in many ways than most Democrats are. Because, again, he was from outside of the club. He was wealthy, but he's from outside of the club and stuff. And I think a lot of people, they like that. They like seeing those people kind of having to deal with something uncomfortable because they never have to deal with anything uncomfortable. And so there's that kind of in your face reaction to Trump too. I think even people that normally wouldn't like Trump, I think they like the fact that some of the ones that always had it their way didn't get it their way. That runs beyond politics. That just runs on this anger that you see across the scale. I mean, that's something you see both among Democrat and Republican voters. Both of them have not had a voice for so long that even if somebody doesn't give them a voice, at least if they attack the people that have been, that they perceive as holding them down for so long, that gives them, you know, I mean, that will give them some energy.
It's like I said, this is all going to be very interesting to see. So, okay. So I want to come down to the local level a little bit because I am in total panic mode. So with our last few minutes, we're going to talk about this. Is there anybody, Dr. Crow, anybody, Democrat, independent, Republican, is there anybody out there who's going to challenge Kevin Stitt for the governor?
I don't know. There might be. I mean, the thing is Stitt has, among the Republican base, he has redeemed himself recently on some stuff. I think one of the things, and it's stuff that, for example, the issue on meat, okay? I think that appeals to a lot of people. Remember, this is, you know, this is still a ranching state to a degree. So, you know, he does have that appeal. He also has another appeal in that sometimes when he says he'll do something, he does it. And I think people, they like that as well. I think he would have been maybe one of the more popular governors that we had had until he tangled to a degree with initially with, again, the gaming compacts and things of this nature. And I think that took steam out of him. I think he's regained the momentum and stuff, but that's an unresolved issue. In other words, you have to pick your battles carefully. And I think that was one of his initial blunders. But I think having said that, on other things, he does have a way of appealing to, and I think it's stuff he believes in too. I want to stress this. I don't think it's just a political factor, but he does have a way of firing up the base again with things that we wouldn't even think of. When I mentioned about the, you know, his stance against PETA recently, that plays to a lot of people in Oklahoma. I do think this is kind of switching the gears to a degree. I do think, though, and I've always advocated this because, again, you have to look at constitutionally who has the authority to do this. I do believe, though, when it comes to the McGirt case, I think the main negotiators for that should still be the U.S. senators more than the governor, because it is a case that still involves federal, you know, it's obviously a federal case. I think our U.S. senators should be the ones who should be the ones taking the lead on finding a resolution to that. Because, again, the job of the U.S. senators is the interest of the state. And so he might be better suited to direct it in that direct, you know, to kind of go in that direction, maybe.
Well, somebody out there has got to, they got to go up against him. Somebody somewhere. I don't think he is a good leader. I don't like him. I think that he is a gaslighting racist, and I think that he's bad for Oklahoma. And I think that somebody somewhere needs to primary him, at the very least primary him. I cannot believe there are zero Democrats who have given their intent to run for Oklahoma governor. I am floored.
I don't think he's a racist. I really don't believe he's a racist at all. I think, like I said, I mean, he didn't come from politics, so he may word stuff differently. You know,
racistly. Yeah, well, he's a racist.
I don't think he has. I really don't believe he's a racist. I don't believe he has ill feelings towards any group. I really believe that. That's one thing I don't sense that with him at all on that.
Brown people and black people do, though. I'm just letting you know that if we're talking about racism and who it's directed to, we know, we feel when we have that racism directed towards us. So that's why I say I feel and I know that he's a racist.
I really don't believe he is. I can honestly say that. And I wouldn't defend somebody if I thought that they were. Now, am I saying that he doesn't say stuff that could be taken that way? Maybe. But I really believe in the core of him, that would be one charge I would not level against him.
How about, and you know, his wife has wrecked not one, but two Oklahoma Highway Patrol cruisers.
Like, well, that's a different issue. I mean,
but still, that goes to his leadership, and that goes to his character, and that goes to the cover up of using our Oklahoma government to cover up these things that his wife is doing.
That may be a more fair issue. I'm not familiar with that. Okay, that's probably a fair issue. I don't think he's a racist, but again, you know, if I can challenge him in other ways, maybe, but I wouldn't challenge him in that one. I don't think he is. I'm real sure. I've had encounters with him. I've had encounters with the supporters, and I've never felt that as being one of his traits.
Well, I mean, I don't know. It's, you know, that's, I think that's the difference between us too, is me being a person of color, and, you know, it's easier to look at it that way, because it's, you don't have to get that directed towards you in the manner of policies and in the manner of these gaming compacts and him going so hard after the tribes. That was completely unnecessary. The only thing that he did was to unite the tribes on that singular issue. He did what a lot of people couldn't.
And I think I mentioned this at this time. If you're wanting to see why he's so much on the gaming compact, I would look at who has backed him and who has given him advice. That's a state issue. You could find the groups that are backing him and are pushing him in that direction. That's where I would look on why he. Again, there's pluses and negatives with Stitt on this, and this is just his background. You know, I'm never a person big on people with a giant business background, and that's it. But there's pluses to that. And I think the gaming contracts and the way he went after that, I think that has to do a lot with where he's getting some advice from. I think being from business, that's not an issue he had lucked at. Does that make sense? And I think you have to figure out who's giving you the advice and all of this. He wasn't politically savvy. And so that, I wouldn't attribute that to racism. I would attribute it to maybe where he, you know, where he received his advice and all of that.
Oh, I agree. He is not politically savvy at all.
He's not. In certain ways, he has a plus over some people that have been in politics. I mean, there are things he can get done. I think even though it's kind of goofy, even though the stuff that I mentioned last time about like the meat and the pita stuff, you know, that may actually end up bringing some of the cattle sales, whatever, to Oklahoma. It might be a smart business move. So there are certain things that he's done that I think a person from government wouldn't do that have worked out. And I do think he has, I mean, again, I wasn't ready to talk about Stitt, but I could come up with stuff that I think he's been successful on that somebody from politics wouldn't have been. But it's a trade-off because, again, even if he was going to talk about the gaming contracts, he just opened up both barrels with no warning and just kind of ran in there without, hey, let's talk to the tribes first. Let's, you know, whatever. But I agree with you. I think on that was a clumsy move.
Well, and I think there's one point that you and I agree on that we've always agreed on, and that government shouldn't be run like a business.
There are two different goals for government. That's right. The purpose of government is not to make money. Okay. Purpose of business is, and I'm not knocking business. I think it's good to have some people in government from business. You need to take that in consideration, but they are two different animals. I will say this. I will fully back Stitt over a Mary Fallon. We've had a definite improvement.
those are my two options.
But wait. Let me say this.
Have been.
This is another reason why I think it was that Stitt came in at the right time, and maybe a little bit. And again, there are weaknesses. You know how uneasy I am with somebody from a straight business background going into government. Having said that, he is a person at the right time, because the problem is with Mary Fallon being in for so long, she tainted basically the government hierarchy in this state. And that's why I think the only one who wasn't from the hierarchy who was not tainted the last time was Gary Jones, who had opposed and who had pointed stuff out. But outside of that, almost all of the state officials were tainted with that. And so that's why Stitt won. I think Stitt was better than most of the ones running because of that issue, except Gary Jones. I think Gary Jones did know of the outsiders. Yeah. There were other outsiders too, but they would have had, you know, different issues too. Like Fisher was an outsider. I mean, there were other outsiders and stuff.
I'm starting to see T.W. Shannon everywhere.
Well, that's yeah. If you want to get me upset,
we're gonna have to talk about that for our. Yeah. We're gonna save that rant for our next episode.
And that's one we can both rant on, I think.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Because you know how I feel about him, and I think I know how you feel about him.
Yeah, I don't. I believe
we're gonna have a lot to discuss.
I believe in elections and I believe in the political process. I don't believe in coronations.
That's right. And we wholeheartedly agree on that, sir.
That's right.
Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of The Crow's Nest. Remember, if you missed any of our past episodes, you can check those out wherever you get your podcast. I'm Kelly J. Lewis with Dr. Kevin Crow. We'll catch you back here next week. Have a great day, everyone.